Only thing unplugged is Forgotten Seasons.
All right, welcome back. Today we have a, I guess we could call him like a colleague, not quite a coworker, but
cousin.
I like that.
Play cousin.
And I think we got Amin El Hassan today, man. How's it going?
Man, it's going great, and I'm glad to do this. You know, I've watched you guys for a while, and I enjoy the stories you guys get out of this podcast. So the opportunity to be a part of it is not lost on me. And it, especially Saturday night, I was at Suns versus Rockets, and that's when they retired Amar Stoudemire's jersey.
Mm.
And so everybody who's kind of that 7 seconds or less team was there. Steve Nash was there, and Leandro Barbosa, and Goran Dragic, and Sean Marion. And there's just a lot of memories coming back. So it's cool to be able to do this show right after that.
Man, we appreciate you coming on, man. I know you got a a special insight. I've been a fan of yours, for a while now. So we appreciate you coming on. And that you enjoy these stories means a lot to us, because we know you're official tissue with yours as well.
Man, I'm gonna tell y'all right now. Like I said, I tell people all the time, the career I have now is because I got to spend a lot of years with some of the greatest ever. You know, where it's like I said, Steve Nash, Sean Marion, Amari Stoudemire, Mike D'Antoni as a coach, Alvin Gentry, Steve Kerr was my GM, David Griffin was my assistant GM, Mark West was my VP. So I got to be around people who had all been involved in the game at a high level, both playing and then afterwards. And I got to learn from them. Like, you know, here's a great example. I'm Jalen, you see me. I'm 6 feet on a good day.
Mm-hmm.
I've never guarded no post player in the league in my life. Not for real, right? But I work with Mark West, and Mark West guarded Hakeem Olajuwon.
Some of the best.
So Mark is telling me about, this is what made it hard to guard. Everyone thought it was hard to guard Hakeem Olajuwon because he was quick. And yes, that was a big part of it. But he said the thing that no one recognizes, he was strong as shit.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said the first thing he do when he catch, he land on both feet at the same time.
So he got,
you don't know which.
So he got both pivots. He got both pivots. Exactly.
Both pivots, yep. Right? And then he says that first dribble, when he goes in, he's trying to hit you in
you
your chest.
You go that way.
Bam.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not even you go that way. You get hit in the chest, and now, even if you know he's just doing it to go back to the other way, you almost paralyzed because he hit you so hard. By the time you're able to react, now he's coming back this way, you going that way. So he said the guys that gave him the biggest problems were like, what's my man? Not Sokolidis, but cats like that, and them big, Joe Klein. There you go. Joe Klein's the name.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Joe Klein was strong as shit. That's so it's like when he hit him, Joe wasn't like, okay. And then Joe Klein was slow, so Hakeem would go into three different counters. By the time he come back this way, Joe's still here from the first one. So he's like, those are the guys that are getting problems. But like, that's an example of, like, now I'm seeing it, and I'm seeing other great post players, and it's clicking in my head in a way that not just watching it, but watching it with the knowledge that Mark West, who played 17 years, is telling me, with the knowledge that Steve Kerr, who played 17 years, he's talking about, coming off the screens. Dan Marley was one of our assistant coaches. Mm-hmm. Dan talking about defensively, kind of the things that he was looking to do. So you get to pick people's brain when you're in that, in that situation. I was lucky to have people who have been around a long time to pick their brains. And that, in turn, made me better for this job, being media, which I never wanted to do this, but it started happening. And just all those stories now become my stories in a weird way.
Facts.
So I think it's important to tell everybody like how this happened. Yes, we're cousins now, and there's a lot of conversation of how can we get this show and this person to this show, which is all great. But this happened organically. We did the Matt Barnes episode last week, and I take it on myself. It skipped my mind. I knew that you were with the Suns, but you hit me after and said, yo, I think we're going to call this somewhat of an emergency pod. You were there for that year. You were there for 5 or 6 seasons with Phoenix. And before that, you spent a year with Isaiah Thomas's Knicks team. And Jesus Christ, man, what an introduction to NBA teams, going from the New York Knicks in 2005 everything that was going on there. And then you go to the Suns, which I think we have a decent understanding of like what was going on. But I saw you say not too long ago, like some people with the Suns were actually upset that more wasn't revealed with all the Sarver thing. So I just wanted to give a preface of why this is happening and then just pitch it to you. Like when you saw that we did that season, like why did you want to now come on and tell your side of the story?
Well, first of all, that the season in New York was incredibly educational as well.
He said incredibly educational.
But I'm gonna be real. Like, so first of all, Isaiah Thomas is like my OG. He's always looked out for me. He doesn't have to do that. Like, I was just an intern around the office or whatever. But every time he saw me after that, even as I was still kind of starting out in Phoenix and moving up, he was always come up, always say what's up, always ask me how everything's doing. And then when I got in the media, he always checks up on me. When I was going through some personal issues, this is maybe like 5-6 years ago. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. I was going through some really crazy personal stuff that nobody knew about. And you know, I'm going to work and I'm doing everything. I see Isaiah at the finals and Isaiah like pulls me aside and says, "What's going on?" And I said, "What's up, man? Like, you know, just excited for the finals." No. Something's going on with you. I said, "I don't know what you're talking about." He's like, "You're full of shit. Something's going on with you. I know." And I didn't tell him, but in my mind, I'm like, this dude, you know, this is a guy that, you know, drafted David Lee with a 30th pick, drafted Wilson Chandler when no one really thought Wilson Chandler was an NBA prospect.
T-Mac.
Mm-hmm. When nobody really thought T-Mac was going to be an elite prospect like that. He was just a skinny kid from high school. Trevor Ariza in the second round, another UCLA guy.
Talking
when
about
everyone told Trevor.
What was that? What did he call it? Ticket? He wanted to have Ticket because he had a special position. I think he called it the Raptor.
The Raptor Five.
A center who can be a ball handler, initiate the offense. So, you know, Isaiah Thomas has been thinking out of the box and connecting dots for a long time now.
And on top of that, just the ability to see something. Like, literally, he's watching me on TV and he's saying, "There's something wrong with him." Like, for him to pick up on that, that's something that's not learned skill. That's something that you got to be almost born with. So I always give props to Isaiah. I know 04-05 was a crazy ass year. Trust me, I know. But also, I show respect because he's always looked out for me in that way. And then other things. There was my introduction to really understanding salary cap and all that stuff was from the VP of the Knicks, a guy named Frank Murphy, who's retired now, but Frank was the first salary cap guy in the NBA. He was the first dude who was like finding loopholes in contracts and things like that. And so he taught me a lot of the behind the scenes stuff of why things happen on a business level in the NBA. Like why is this team not tanking? Why they sign this guy versus that guy? And so I learned a lot in New York. I also learned that losing sucks. So that was tough, but it's funny because that wasn't my first NBA job. My first NBA job was in Atlanta, and I learned stuff there. I learned, you know, Rick Mahorn was my OG there, Jimmy Jackson and Jason Terry. Like those three guys, those were the first three NBA guys that I knew who, you know, kind of rock with me or whatever. And same thing with all of them. Every time I saw them, they always showed love way before the media stuff. So, That's kind of where I walked into Phoenix, which was, you know, Atlanta, we were a bad team. New York, we were a bad team. Walked into Phoenix, and it was like, this is a team that's going to win a championship.
2006, was it 6-7 your first year or 5-6?
So my first year was 5-6, but nobody knows it because I was like as periphery can get. But still then 06-07, I was there like 100 hours a week. Even though I was technically an intern and going to get my master's degree, I was there every day. I was in the video room. I was with the scouts. I was with the coaches. And so that first year, 06-07, we won 61 games. We had a 15-game winning streak, and then we had a 17-game winning streak in the same season. Amari had just come back from his microfracture, was all NBA first team. That's the first time.
Still dunking.
Yep. Dunking, and then came back with a whole new package of floaters and jumpers mid-range. And all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Mid-range. It was killing, right? Steve was either second or, you know, he was third in MVP voting and obviously all NBA. Leandro Barbosa was sixth man of the year. And then obviously Sean Marion, Boris Diaw, Roger Bell. Roger Bell was all NBA, all defensive team. Right? So like
That's the Kobe year. That's when he clotheslined Kobe.
That was the year after he clotheslined Kobe. He clotheslines Kobe 05-06. And then 06-07, that's where like now he's being recognized as being like, okay, this guy's a premier defensive player in the league. And so all of this is happening and we're like, oh, we about to do this. And I'm like, wow, how great is it? My first year, we're about to win a championship. And so the first round series, I can't even remember who we played now, but we whooped the hell out of them. Second round, we're playing the Spurs. And that's our big obstacle. That's the one that we can't, that mountain that we couldn't climb, right? And so, but we finally felt like this was the year that we were deep enough and experienced because they had lost to the Spurs a couple of times before. So now it's like, okay, we got these guys. So game one is the game where Steve's nose is cut. So he has to keep coming out to get, you know, dressing, they can't change, stitch it because of where it is. So they have to just keep dressing it. And the refs were kind of like, now I can say this, the refs were kind of helping us out because they would like wait until the last, like, okay, now he's dripping. You got to get out of here. You go clean it up and we come back or whatever. But Spurs basically steal that game because Steve's nose is all messed up. We come back, we win game two, they win game three, and then we win game four, and we win it kind of handily, I might add. Mm-hmm. And that's the Robert Horry hip check. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so Robert Horry hip checks Steve Nash into the scores table, just a frustration play, dirty play. I know Rob now, he's a good dude, but that was a dirty play, right? Amari Stoudemire and Boris Diaw are on the bench. They run over to help Steve up. They get suspended.
Don't even touch anybody.
That was the rule. You can't leave the bench. They got scouts. Yeah. They got scouts. As soon as the funk jumps off, they got somebody directly on the bench. They got video. They start putting the camera on. They start putting the camera directly on the bench specifically for that. So that was the rule.
Practice that all NBA teams do now, which is as soon as anything happens, all the assistants jump up and they do this. That's because of what happened to us. Mm-hmm. Like before that, Tim Senior, they went through it against New York, and that was in 97. It happened a couple of times, but we were the one that were like, everyone said, hey, this is, you got to have a protocol for when a fight happens. Here's a funny story. So we're saying to the league, hey, those guys didn't get off to start shit. They got off as peacemakers. They were going to go check out their teammate and they ran up the sideline because it was a score stand. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Stern said, well, I'm sorry. The law is the law. Like basically there's no spirit of the law here. And I said, but you're the one that wrote the law, bro. Like you can interpret any way you want. It's not like God came down with the 10 commandments and told you it's got to be this way. So we watched the film and there was a play in the first half where Francisco Elson clotheslined James Jones. Dirty foul, hard foul, right? James falls down on the ground. It's such a hard foul that on the bench for the Spurs, Tim Duncan and Bruce Bowen both step onto the floor. Like, oh shit, what's going on? And then James, because James is a cool dude, gets up and shakes it off, doesn't do anything, and walks to the free throw line. So there was no harm, no foul, just a regular foul call. And so we sent in the tape. We said, yo, these guys came on the floor after like a dust up. They said, well, that wasn't a fight. That was just a foul. So my thing was, so James should have hit him after he got clotheslined. So if he had punched him, then they would be suspended. But because James is a professional and did the right thing, we in the wrong.
But then you would have lost James, too, if he got to go to blows. They got to suspend him, too, if he let one go.
Look, if you're telling me I lose James Jones, Amari Stoudemire, I'm already losing Amari and Morris. If you tell me I got to lose James Jones, but in return, they lose Tim Duncan, we'll take that deal. We'll take that deal because that changes a lot. Now we're going against Oberto and Elson, or like that's a lot. That's a huge difference now. So, yeah.
So that's 07. You brought us then. And then 08, the next year, Kerr comes in. You make the Shaq trade. So what transpires after 07 into 08?
So when we lose that Spurs series, and that was tough because we knew that was the NBA Finals. Mm-hmm. Utah was the conference finals. They weren't, you know, Carlos Boozer and Darren Williams, no disrespect, but they were young guys. And that was their only kind of hurrah as far as being that good. So the Spurs did them, we would have done them the same way. And then the finals, that was LeBron with the Cavs team where it was clear this isn't an NBA championship caliber team, even though LeBron was amazing. So it was kind of like, oh shit, man, like that was our chance. So we come back the next year and it starts. And now because the pressure is heightened, now when Mike D'Antoni first got there, and I wasn't there when he first got there, but when he first got there, it's like, yo, the team wasn't good. And he said, you know, let's play the style that I mastered in Europe as a coach over there. Spread floor, five out, nobody in the paint, and shoot more threes. And so 03-04, no one remembers, but like they started in 03-04 when Mike took over. And it was all right. And then 04-05, they signed Steve, they signed Q Rich, and I want to say Stephen Hunter. And they won 62 games. Mm-hmm. And it was the best team in the league. And we're blowing teams out and everything. But it's still kind of, we're the young team, right? And so they go to the conference finals and Joe Johnson has the broken face. And the Spurs were just, look, the Spurs were better than us in 05 for sure. And they win the championship, obviously. 06, Amari's out with a microfracture. Mm-hmm. And Joe Johnson has left now.
Clippers almost got you in the first round, right?
Yeah. Shout out to Daniel Ewing. Daniel Ewing hadn't played a second in the game, and Mike Dunleavy's bright idea is like, I'm gonna put him in the game. And as soon as we saw him on the court, Roger said, just find me. He's on me, just find me. And he hits the shot, that three-pointer in the corner. And if you watch the replay, he's running up the court and he's yelling at our bench, I fucking told you. Because it's like, yo, you're gonna put a cold rookie in the game. I think the reason why he put him, like why Mike did, was I want to say he played with Mike Jr. At Duke. And like, so he kind of like, Mike Sr. knew him and thought like, oh yeah, like I could, these Duke guys, I could put them in. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what the logic was. All I know is that Roger called that shit and then let us know that he called the shit.
Mike be anyway, overthinking it sometime. He'd been known to overthink it a little bit.
So I've heard. So 06, that team started the year, people thought we were going to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. We won 54 games, and we go to conference finals again. And in the conference finals, Kurt Thomas gets hurt, Roger Bell gets hurt, and you know the Mavs end up beating us. So then 07 is like, okay, we're all healthy, and that's the year we're like, this is a championship year. And what happens, happens. So when we come back for 08, now it's like there's a pressure that didn't occur before. Mm-hmm. Now Mike D'Antoni's starting to feel that pressure. Mm-hmm. The organization's starting to feel that pressure. We start the year, we're not great, but we're also, it's not falling apart. But Sean Marion kind of was wanting a new deal, and his agent at the time was the late Dan Fagan. And if y'all know, Dan Fagan was a ruthless negotiator. This dude, he wasn't trying to give any leeway. His whole thing was like, I'm going to put pressure on organization.
That's definitely
so that it. That's how we get.
Mm-hmm. Marion deserved it, though. Marion.
He did, but also, like, we were in the luxury tax, mm-hmm. and he was the highest paid player on the team, which was – and he had 2 years left on his deal, so he was looking for an extension. And so – and they wanted max every last dollar. So we were coming up with scenarios of – what if we did this? What if we did that? And they're coming back like, no, it has to be max. So we're like, we want to just play it out. Dan Fagan being Dan Fagan was like, hey, man, we're not doing that. So he's basically shaking the tree. At the same time in Miami, Shaq has worn out his welcome. I don't know if y'all had Big Fella on, but that story is hilarious. Like him wearing out his welcome in Miami. Him and Pat Riley almost fought in practice.
Oh yeah.
Uncle Jerome said, as they're walking off, he said, "Well, I'm gonna go get my bags packed." He said, "What do you mean?" Jerome, funny as hell. He said, as they're walking off the floor, like, "Well, I'm gonna go home and pack."
Mm-hmm.
So, at the time that trade was done, owner to owner, Mickey Arison, the owner of the Heat, and Robert Sarver, owner of the Suns, they were talking about each other's problems, and they said, "Yo, do y'all want to do this?" So then it started this whole thing about like, what happens if we get Shaq? And so the first things first was, if you remember, Shaq was hurt. Like, they won a title, and then that next year he was hurt a lot. And they were saying his career is over. This is it. This is the end.
Was it the toe? Was it still the toe?
It was the toe, the back, the hip. You know what I mean?
It was a bunch of things, right?
It was 400 for 10 years on that.
So, Aaron Nelson, who was the head of our training staff, they sat Aaron Nelson down and we watched. I had to pull the film. I was a video coordinator that year. So I'm pulling film on Shaq and we're sitting there and Nelly's watching. And he's like, "He's fine." I'm like, "What? Like, that's all my, no. You see the way he's doing this? That's because this muscle right here is trying to compensate, but this muscle doesn't work out. Da, da, da. Bring him in here in 2 weeks. He'll be fine." And so he gets, that's the green light. So then the next thing was like the analytics, right? And so I had to do that. And our whole thing was that year, we were the number one, or we were top five in the league in terms of defensive field goal percentage on the first shot. So we run a possession, we're defending. That shot that comes out of it, we defended it really well. Here's the problem. We're one of the worst defensive rebounding teams. So these teams were grabbing up. They were just put it up, grab it, and go back up with it. And we weren't good at the second and third kind of contest. So guarding, defensive rebounding was an issue. Obviously keeping defenses to one possession was an issue. And then the third thing was we played the Spurs. And everything for us was about the Spurs. The Spurs, they were throwing a Timmy on that low block mercilessly. And we didn't have anybody. Like, Amari tried, but it just, at some point, that dude he's just bigger and taller and freakishly talented and skilled and smart. And there were no team scheme you could do, because then he just hit it out there. And now Tony's going crazy.
He's better.
Nobody had the answer. It wasn't better. Just you guys.
Was just better. With all due respect to everybody involved, Tim Duncan was just better than everybody else during those times. You could have a lot of similar size. Like, he wasn't that, he was bigger, taller, but he wasn't like, Timmy was never really, David Robinson with it. You know what I mean? He was like he was just taller and bigger, but he was just better than everybody else, man. It was like, you could try to outthink Timmy, or then you could sleep. He'll do something sneakily athletic. He was sneaky athletic during that last little window when he was aggressive before he started deferring. Remember, he was hook dunking, and you know what I mean? So Timmy was just, it ain't nobody else's fault. It was Tim Duncan.
So, but that was our big concern. So we're like, if we get Big Fella, and if he's healthy and he's bought in to like what we need him to do, he can help us in all the things that we're awful at. Now, we knew there's a trade-off here, because Sean was our Swiss Army knife. This was a guy that was guarding everybody. He would literally guard 1 through 5. We had him on Yao Ming some games. Sean doesn't get talked about enough as far as being the first kind of, or not the first, actually. Obviously there have been a lot of players like that, but an elite guy of that level.
He never made an all defensive team, right?
No.
Sean Marion?
So,
that's correct.
Yeah, so that was funny. Back then, I want to say the all defensive teams were picked by the coaches. It wasn't picked by the media. So we would push him, doing the PR stuff. So he would appear on the DPOY rankings. I think he got third 1 year in Defensive Player of the Year. But he was not on all defensive team, because I don't know why the coaches didn't. I still don't understand that one. And maybe that's a thing where, sounds kind of crazy, but like, we were so ahead of the game, people didn't understand what we were doing and thought. Because, this is back when people were still going, "Oh, how many points per game do they allow?" Not by possession, not factoring in, we gave up a lot of points because we play fast. If we held the ball like you guys, like Detroit, like, San Antonio, our points per game would be lower too. But because we're playing up and down, there's more possessions, it's a higher points per game. But people weren't understanding that. So I think Sean was hurt by that, even though if you look at it, we weren't terrible defensively. We're probably middle of the road. So I'd say all that to say, we do the deal. We bring Shaq in. And I go pick him up from the Ritz midnight to start his workout. He gets in and like literally midnight, we're doing the workouts. And Shaq said, "What's up, big fella? My name's Amin." And he says, "Are you Muslim?" And I said, "Yeah, alhamdulillah." And he's like, "Me too, alhamdulillah." I'm like, "Oh, like I've heard things, but like I didn't know." And I'm like, "Oh man, like you don't, things that you learn." So we go out there, the first workout, we're teaching them how we do pick and rolls. And so, Jelani, you remember this, like Sean would slip. Mm-hmm. You know, he'd come and we call him touch and go. Mm-hmm. Like you wouldn't even set the screen. You would run up and then.
Everybody stole that. Everybody stole that afterwards.
Everybody stole that. Mm-hmm. We were the first ones doing that shit. So we're showing Shaq to do it. I'm the ball handler defender. Coach is, I think it's Coach Gentry. He's dribbling. So I'm like, okay. And Shaq comes and in his mind, he touches me and slips. But what happened was, it was like I got hit by a train, dude. My neck cracked. Mm-hmm. My ears started ringing. Mm-hmm. And that was my first introduction. You know, you see Shaq, oh my God, he's a lot bigger than on TV. But like mm-hmm. on the court, mm-hmm. now I understood why everybody, I'm mm-hmm. like, damn.
I think Kevin Garnett said, thank God Shaq was raised right. Shout out to Mama O'Neal.
Facts.
1,000%. If he was an actual asshole as opposed to...
If he liked Hennessy and Black and Miles as opposed to being a nice guy and occupying his time with DJing and making movies and shit. Like if he like...
And, yeah.
If he wanted...
And wanting to be friendly and accessible.
Boom.
That's the like Shaq wanted people to...
What's the like Wilt Chamberlain, the big man complex... They talked about Wilt Chamberlain used to do that too with the league because he didn't want to alienate himself off from the rest of the players because he was so far advanced. And I think there's a book about it. I'll send it to you, book. But I think Shaq had the same thing because he was so dominant. He almost had to maintain some type of childlike quality about him so he wouldn't mm-hmm. alienate himself from mm-hmm. you know you want he friends
scare people
yeah you want friends
so he wouldn't scare people man, which is a crazy thing mm-hmm. you know and. Shaq behind the scenes is so different than what's on TV.
Facts.
I was with him for a year and a half in Phoenix, and I was always amazed. Like, I'm like, why doesn't anyone notice about you, man? He's like, he shopped at Walmart every day. He would drive to Walmart at like 2 a.m. and go to Walmart, and he would come back with shit.
Because he's got 75 products in Walmart. He's got to check the shelves.
Now he does.
Now he does. Back then, so I'll give you a great example. You know, remember the flip camera? It was like a camera you take pictures, and then it had like a little stick that came out in USB, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I ever even heard of that shit was Shaq. Mm-hmm. Shaq came in with it. Mm-hmm. And I said, damn, and I'm thinking it's Shaq, so this must be like $1,000, like crazy features. It's $99. Like, $99? Where'd you get that from? Like, what kind of deal is that? It's like, Walmart. I'm like... You went to Walmart? He's like, I go every night. Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't sleep.
So, you can't sleep. Shaq drove an Astro van. Like, everyone remembers the big truck, mm-hmm. the fucking 16-wheeler. Everyone remembers the Lamborghini.
The Benz.
The big motorcycle. I don't even know. It was like a slingshot, but it wasn't. It was mm-hmm. it was just a huge-ass four-wheel motorcycle. He drove an Astro van most of the time, man. Now, it was a nice Astro van.
It was elevated.
But it's an elevated Astro, but it's an Astro van at the end of the day. So we go to his workouts. 2 weeks later, he's playing for us. And we end the year like 30-10 or something like that. We went on a really good run. Now, the last day of the year was one of those, if we win and he lose, they lose and they lose and they win, we're the 3 seed. But if we now we're like the 7th seed. It was one of those years. So we end up like this. I want to see the 7th seed, and we're playing the Spurs in the first round. So, like, here we go. This is what we bought Big Fella for. Game one, it's like a heavyweight fight. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then They're down three, and to go to overtime, they draw up a play where Michael Finley starts and under the basket, he curls up and he curls around. I want to say Alberto was the screener. And it was Amari and Barbosa on the play. They drew it up. They were targeting those guys because those were, like, of the guys on the floor, those were kind of our weak spots defensively. And Mike Finley hits that three. We go to overtime. So it's like, all right, cool. Like, we still got this. We were up in the game or whatever. And that's the play where it's one of the most famous plays in NBA history. They ran high pick and roll with Manu and Timmy. Shaq drops because we're trying to stop Manu. Manu kicks it out to Timmy, top of the key three. Hadn't shot a three the entire year. Hadn't made one. Hadn't attempted one. So our scouting report was like, if he's out there, don't react. And you see Roger go like, oh, no, it's Timmy. And that motherfucker put it up. And when he roared like that, I didn't say it at the time. I've said it since, like, since I've been in the media. This is game one. I was like, ain't no way we're beating them. Because I saw the look in his eyes. And Timmy was never emotional. Never emotional.
Never.
The amount of raw just passion that came out of him after he hit that shot, it was one of those, like, I don't know how you could be a backbreaking, series backbreaking three in game one, but it felt like that. Mm-hmm. So now we're down one. We're in San Antonio. Game one was like Saturday. Game two was Saturday afternoon. Game two was like Wednesday night. We should have flown home. We didn't. We stayed in San Antonio the whole time. So now everyone's kind of going crazy. Right. And only so many times you can go to
Riverwalk. I was just about to say, you riverwalking way too much. The diet ain't like that down in San Antonio. You got better culinary options at the crib, man.
And we're sitting there, and now you it's a heartbreaking loss. Mm-hmm. So now you're just sitting there in a hotel room, everyone doing this. At this point, I think Mike D'Antoni's starting to feel like, man, if we don't win this series, they're going to get rid of me. I know why he felt like that, because coaches are paranoid creatures, because they hired to get fired is the saying, right? But he wasn't going to get fired. Like, we were talking about Mike going to be like Jerry Sloan. He's going to be in Phoenix forever, right? But Mike is starting to feel the itch, and Mike's agent is like, all right, well, let's start figuring out what are the other opportunities that are going to be available. So now Mike... me and a couple other guys on staff, we go to Fuddruckers for lunch. And we walk in, we see Mike D'Antoni and his brother Dan D'Antoni is on the staff. They sitting at a table. Now, anytime I've ever walked into a restaurant, I've seen Coach, hey, come over here, what are y'all getting, da-da-da. He hit us with the, hey, guys. And I'm like, oh, they're having a conversation over there. Jack McCallum was with them, the writer. So they were like, this don't feel right, but like, all right, we'll go here, we sit, we eat. I went and saw Forgetting Sarah Marshall also in between this time.
Great movie.
Great movie. I've only seen it one time. That one time. I loved it, but that movie always reminds me of San Antonio, the 5 days of waiting.
PTSD.
And is Mike going to leave now? Mm-hmm. And what are we going to do? So it's like, I can't watch that movie. So game two happens, and amazingly, we have a chance to win game two, and like some shit at the end, as always happens in San Antonio, some shit happens. They did everything right. We did one mistake. Boom, now we're down two. We're going back to Phoenix. Now, mind you, we could have been up 2-0, but you could tell when the spirit is broken. Mm-hmm. So our spirit's broken. We got game three, they blow us out. So now we're down 3-0. Now everyone's starting to get ready, like shit's about to change. We blow them out in game four, but it doesn't matter. We come back game five, a close game. We mess up like the ATO, and now we're out. And so Steve Kerr's like, well, we just have to get better at certain things or whatever. And I think Mike took that as Steve trying to either push him out or trying to he become the coach or whatever, which again was never a reality at that point. Mike quits. He goes to New York. So this is now, I gave an hour lead up to where we get to the season with Matt Barnes, right? We're interviewing different guys for coach. And we end up hiring Terry Porter because two reasons. One, TP was Steve Kerr's teammate in San Antonio. So they were really close. But the other thing was TP was an assistant with Adelman. And we had stolen a lot of Sacramento's stuff for our stuff. So all that corner stuff was our elbow series.
I was about to say the elbow, yep.
So we were like, okay, this is a guy who gets us offensively, and maybe he can coach us up defensively, right? Because we had the number one offense, right? Even
the system's after there. The system's there.
Good bones.
It's
good bones.
What do they call it? When you buy a house and you don't have to do anything.
Good turnkey. Bones or turnkey. Turnkey, yeah.
Turnkey.
Yeah.
I don't have to do shit. The flooring is perfect. All I got to do is
get some Wi-Fi in here and get a couch or two. Yeah.
So we hire TP and they go, the coaches, now I'm in the front office. I'm out the video room and now I'm like scouting coordinator or whatever. The coaches go on a retreat. Come back from the retreat, I asked my guy, like, yo, so how was it? And he's like, weird. And I said, what do you mean weird? And he said, we talked about offense the entire time. And I'm like, wait, so y'all were teaching him our offense? And he said, no. He was teaching us his offense. What's his offense? His offense was the Flip Saunders playbook that's this big, 100 down.
452 twist, 452 twist. 452
twist. Oh my God.
Two twists. Come on, man. You know what that means.
When I tell you that shit, first of all, nothing funnier than trying to hear rookie Goran Dragic try to say 452 twist with a heck ass accent.
Facts.
But like, when I tell you, we were like, the fuck are you talking about, man? So I'm thinking, our front office guys, we're trying to be, hey, give him a chance. Da, da, da. So we're saying, you know what it is? He's going to implement some of his offense at some point. He needs y'all to kind of know it backwards and forwards. So when the players ask, you're not doing the, hey, coach, I don't, you know. So, but like once we get to camp, this shit's going to be the regulars. Okay. So we get to camp. Day one. Now, mind you, again, defense was our big thing. Day one, offense. 452 twist and all the bullshit Flip Saunders plays, right? So we're like, okay, so he's trying to like, because everyone on the team been here last year pretty much, you know. Matt, I think Matt was the only new guy at that point and the rookies, but like they'll pick up our offense because everyone can help them with that, but coach wants to do it. Day two, his offense. Day three, Steve has a word with him like, hey man, I think we should like start getting on the defense because that's really a thing. So it's like, all right. So then he has them doing the remember the shit from Hoosiers,
the Indian runs.
Fire Feet and King, the leader of the, you know, what I forgot the drill, but diving on the loose ball, take a charge,
diving on the
slide, yeah, jump up, get a rebound, yeah.
Hoosiers was a movie about small high school in Indiana, right? College, whatever. He's doing this to Steve Nash, Grant Hill, Shaquille O'Neal, right? Like three Hall of Famers, first ballot Hall of Famers, deep in their careers. Two of them done one MVP. And the third almost won MVP. Probably would have won one had he not got hurt. So this is kind of like, this isn't NBA defense. This is shit you do with a high school team or a college team. So now the guys are starting to grumble. And we come back from camp and we're like, okay, is this really happening? But we're still kind of holding out hope. Raja and Boris are like, Boris Diaz, they're like, this shit ain't working, bro. It's funny, whenever the shit's not working, there's always someone who knows it immediately and tells everybody immediately, and everybody else lies to themselves. We were absolutely, like Raja and Boris were 100% right. This ain't work, it's not going to work. That's why what happened in Milwaukee with Adrian Griffin, even though they're 30-11, I understood it. Because I'm like, you know when it's not going to work. But everybody's sitting around lying to each other. So Raja's super disruptive. Raja's my OG. So I could say that he was super disruptive. We'd be doing 5-on-0 over here. Rodgers on the other end of the court, practicing hook shots from three. Just the
Roger,
left hand, right hand.
Rodgers seems like an asshole in the best way.
But he's
both can be true.
Yes. He's the kind of asshole you need around here because he'll tell you what you need to hear, not what you'd like to hear.
Boris is like that too, and he do it from the French side. He come with the French, you know.
So I'm gonna give you the great example of how they both did the same thing, but in their own way. So Roger was, like I said, just messing around, and then he would just grab the ball and then walk up to this side of the court, watch them go to the 5-on-0, and what the fuck are we doing? And just walk back. And so I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh man, like this. You try not to laugh. It's funny, but you can't laugh, but also you can't react. So we're just sitting there, right? Boris was different. So Boris Diaw grew up. His mother was the greatest French women's basketball player ever. So this dude was literally born to play basketball. Him and TP and Turioff and all those guys went to this academy, INSEP. It's literally designed just to make you into a pro basketball player. His favorite player is Magic Johnson. So with Mike D'Antoni, we let Boris rebound and bring the ball up, and like he would just lead the break. TP comes in and says, you're a power forward. When you grab a rebound, you got to find a guard and get to him.
Pissed off the French dude.
Dog, pissed off. Like imagine telling Mozart, yo, you can only play the xylophone, facts. Bro.
Nah.
Like, so Boris, he's a genius basketball
player. He is.
I know people are going to look at his stats. When I tell you this dude's IQ, basketball-wise, was through the roof.
Bro, Steven Jackson said he's the most talented player he's ever played with.
Could do anything. Anything he wanted. He just didn't want to.
If he cared to. What time is lunch? I want to be ready for, you know.
With the cappuccino. He's going to practice with a cappuccino.
Facts.
So Boris started doing this. He would grab the rebound. Take one hard dribble up the court like he was about to bust out. Then he would stop, and then he would turn, and he would find Steve, and then he would hand him the ball like it was a baby. Like this. And then he'd turn and look at the bench like I'm doing the thing you asked me to do. So now TP's like, these guys, we're not buying in, and da-da-da. So now we're like, we got to trade them because they're not buying in, even though they were right. And we were wrong. Also, there's some contract stuff with Roger too, but like the reality was it wasn't because of the contract. It was because he was quote unquote being disruptive, even though he was telling the thing that everybody had on their mind. Shaq, meanwhile, this is how Shaq would do. We'd be stretching and Shaq would just start singing. Remember that T-Pain song? I could put you in a mansion somewhere in Wisconsin. Right? Shaq would sing, but he would change the lyrics to "No Baloney. We miss Mike D'Antoni." This is the middle of practice, bro, while they're stretching. So everybody's kind of out on TP. They have a conversation with TP and say, hey, man, like the guys, the morale is down and like the offense ain't really clicking. I think you should start to reintroduce the stuff that we do. So he goes in and he takes one of our more successful plays, this one called 21 chase, right? Which is a pistol action on the side, and the big comes, sets a drag screen after the handoff, and then he rolls and the other guy flares, and it's a bunch of things, but we got 21 chase, 21 flare. There were all 21 keep. There were all different ones. So he says, all right, we're gonna run this. It's called pistol. And instead of the big coming and set the screen, he goes to the block, which is like our whole shit was 5-out. Keep that paint clear so that Steve can get in there and make plays. You throw Shaq on the block, you just, now it's basically a post-up play. Which Shaq, when he came, he was like, I don't want to play offense anymore. I just want to be Bill Russell and help Amari become the best big in the league. He said all the right things.
Not a lot of people know that. The big fella would come over and say something like that in a situation like that. That's interesting you said that, Amin. Like, nobody knows. Go ahead.
He thought his career was over. So he was so appreciative that our training staff got him back. He was like, I'll do whatever it takes.
Right? That's when he was diving all over loose balls. Remember that year?
Yep. He
was
diving. The bench?
The whole bench was moving because he was diving all over loose balls all over the place. Yep. Yeah. He bought in.
But so now we come back with TP stuff, and now everything's a post up. And at first, Shaq is like us, like, what's going on? But you know, like a wild animal, he might look tame, but you give him that taste of blood, it all comes rushing back. And so now Shaq is like, fuck yeah, we're running this shit. Give me the rock. So now we're running everything through Shaq. Steve bringing the ball up, dumping it into Shaq, and Shaq is, and Shaq is still Shaq. He's an all-star that year. He's all-star mm-hmm. game MVP, but mm-hmm. that's
third,
not
third what, team All-NBA.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what our offense was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right. And it made a lesser version of us. And then defensively, we still weren't any better. And so now everybody's kind of out on him. And we go to the All-Star break. And the rumor starts moving around. They about to fire TP. Now, mind you, this was like a secret. Nobody knew. Except the admin for Steve Kerr, who was a lovely lady, and she was on point. She knew her, all her stuff. Like, she was organized. She was excellent at her job. But I guess she told her son was a big Suns fan. Mm-hmm. And she told her son, you know, you're trying to give your kid, like, yo, man, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, by the way, they're going to switch the coach. And that's something that the kid would feel like, oh, cool, I knew that before anybody knew it. This dumbass goes and writes a blog about it. So gets mm-hmm. out. They, and it ain't hard to tell from the last name. Like, it was, her name wasn't like Johnson. It was, let me say, it was a name like, yo, is this person related to you? Yeah, that's my son. She got the heave ho. So TP gets fired. Alvin comes in. And Alvin walks in. And the first thing he does in practice is like, and this is what I imagine what Doc did. Like, when you got a guy who wasn't sure what he wanted to do, whatever, then the new guy comes in and he knows exactly what he's going to do. Everybody's energized, like, oh, okay, because he's like, we're doing this. We're running 21. It's not called pistol. It's called 21. Shaq, you're going to set a drag scene. Da, da, da. The first game, I want to say, man, let me look it up, because I know the first three games we played under Alvin, we averaged like 140 a game or something. It was the most obvious, like, hey, the joy is back. And let me just hold on. I'm just pulling.
Yeah, you score 140, 142, 140.
The first three games, we went from like this middling offense to now we're unchanged. So now we're like, oh shit, this is it. We're going to do the second half of the season, this magical run. We're going to get to the playoffs and anything goes there. And then Amari gets poked in his eye out for the year. He had been poked in his eye during training camp. I was the one that had to drive him to the eye surgeon 2 hours from Tucson up to Phoenix. We were wondering whether he's going to be able to see again. So that kind of like kills us, but we're still good. And we're competing, we're competing, we're competing. We get to, it's like maybe the last month of the season. It's like, and it's clear now, if you want to be in the Western Conference playoffs, you got to win 50 games, which yep. is insane. Like the minimum, yep. the get in, the cover charge is 50 wins. So we're playing Denver. Home. We're playing Denver, and us and them are around that same kind of fighting for that spot. And Grant Hill's driving to make the go-ahead layup. Dante Jones gets beat, sticks his leg out. Again, crazy guy on the line, right? Dante Jones, another one of them guys. Sticks his leg out, trips G Hill. G Hill falls, no call. They come back, they win the game. We lodged a protest. We said, yeah, this dude, not, it should have been like a flagrant. This is a dirty play. He didn't even make a play on the ball. He just tripped him. And back then you had to go into, there's a website. You put in, you tag the play, and you write what the complaint is and all that stuff. And they came back. Stu Jackson hit us back a couple of days later, and he's like, after review, yes, it was should have been a foul on Dante Jones. Our bad.
No. One protest ever is actually
the Miami one. Shaq.
It was Shaq. Yeah.
Shaq fouled out and he actually had five fouls. So that's the day I learned they'll never reverse a bad call. They'll only reverse like a call that like is illegal, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It was illegal for them to foul out Shaq with five fouls. It's not mm-hmm. illegal for them to miss Dante Jones tripping. We lose mm-hmm. that game. We lose the season series to them. We end up not making the playoffs. But that season was so fucking funny and hilarious because Shaq was full Shaq. Matt was like Matt. Well, this was Matt's first. No, he was still doing 1 year deals, but this was his first year not making minimum. So, and he was a starter. And the funniest shit was Matt. Matt was like, Matt obviously knows his game. He doesn't play outside himself. But once a game, he would have a turnover that was so egregious. Like, what were you thinking?
What, the long pass?
Either the long pass, or it'd be like something. it was like, what were you thinking? So Shaq called him Apple Turnover. But it was like, yo, it wasn't his fault. Like, because you look at his stats and stuff, like, he never turns the ball over. It's just he'd have one memorable one, like, every couple of games. Now, the other thing that was happening was this is when I learned that Shaq is one of the most magnificent liars known to man. This man just likes lying. Not because, like, he just likes telling stories and he's trying to see how far he can go with it. So Matt, you know, Matt was all state high school. He could have played D1 college football.
Facts.
Mr. Football, all that shit. Shaq said, I was Mr. Football in New Jersey, like at quarterback. But then they said I was too big. It wasn't fair. So they made me switch to basketball. Like he just say shit like that. In training camp, we have Palm Springs, and we have a breakfast meeting the day before like our preseason game. Shaq come in late, sweating, like kind of dressed like not in sweats or whatever. Right, he sits down. I'm at the table with the rookies. I got all the rookies because you know, early on, I'm kind of walking them through a lot of shit. So Shaq sits down, and I said, "What's up, big fella? Where were you?" He's like, "Man, I went to LA last night. I went to meet up with this girl and we went to dinner and then we were like, you know what? Let's just take it to go and go back." And it said, she's driving me back. And then she started acting crazy. And I said, "Yo, just drop me off right here in the middle of nowhere. Like, this is crazy. I can't be in this situation, whatever." And she's like, no. And she started gunning the engine. And the rookies are all like, "Oh shit, like this is what the NBA is like. Shaq is telling you. Crazy being abducted, whatever." And then I'm listening to him like, so Shaq says, so I said, "How'd you get out of it?" He said, "I pull out the silverware, the knife from the to-go box and say, yo, I'll stab you if you don't let me out." And so she pulls over and she lets me out. I said, "Hey man, big fella, I've been to a lot of restaurants, fancy restaurants. I ain't never seen one where they give you metal utensils in the to-go box." And this smile rocks on his face. I'm like, I knew this shit was fake, man. I said, "How much of that was real?" He said, "I went to LA." That was it. That was the only thing. I went to LA and I spent the night there and I'm a little late coming. That was the whole story. But he would like telling these stories. We went and saw Notorious. Remember the Biggie movie? They had a screener for us to watch it early. So we went and watched it as a team. And when we sitting there afterward, G Hill's talking about, "I was at the Vibe party that Biggie got shot at." We're like, "Word?" He's like, "Yeah," because he was dating Tamia at the time. And Tamia's godfather was Quincy Jones. And so they were at the party and then they left. And they said that like 15 minutes later is when Biggie got shot at Fairfax and La Cienega or whatever. So we're all like, that's a wild story. Shaq's sitting, the only one not over here, over there. He said, "Man, that ain't shit. I saw him that day." I was like, "What?" He's like, "Yeah, I was at the tattoo parlors, me and Uncle Jerome, and Biggie and Little C's walked into the tattoo parlor, and they were to get tattoos, and like, hey man, what's up? What's going on? What are y'all up to?" "Oh, not too much. What y'all up to?" "Oh, we going to the Vibe party tonight." And Shaq said, I said, "Don't do that." And then he sat back in his chair as if to be like, I'm like, "Well, hold on, are you trying to tell us that if Biggie had listened to you, like that day, like you knew shit was going to go down?" And Shaq like, now, Jerome says they actually did see.
Hey, now, hold on.
They did see them.
Big fella had been known to tell you, like when I played with him, he'd been known to tell you, stay out of there, don't be going over there with so and so. I heard you being with you, heard you hanging out with so and so. They see you in the club. Don't be doing that. You know what I mean? He has been known to send a message or two about maybe what you should. I'm not saying it is true, you know what I mean, or what degree of completion we got to the truth. But in fairness, he has been known to, hey, woo, woo, woo. Hey, I heard you be with so-and-so, or I heard you be a so-and-so every week. Don't be going through there. People be getting jacked because he's been in L.A. He played in L.A.
Right.
When we were in the league, you remember during these times when it was Jack and NBA players and me coming out of the clubs in L.A.? So if he found out you were frequent a mood, a Garden of Eden, and they was getting a bead on you, he would kind of act, maybe not this week. You know what I mean? Yeah. Then he would kind of let you do what you needed to do with it. You know what I mean? So
that's how he framed it. He said, I said, don't do that. And then he just sat back.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Shout out to Shaq, man. Right. I think you coined Glass Michelani the best NBA vet of all time.
Of all times, baby.
Dog, he told us he was in Beat Street.
Now that I can't help you with, big fella. You on your own with that one.
He said, I was in Beat Street. I was, look it up. Go get the movie. Rent the movie. And, you know, because Beat Street, nobody has Beat Street. You can't go to Blockbuster Video.
You got to go. You got to track that down.
But our head video coordinator, Noel Gillespie, was like, I got that shit at home. I'm bringing it tomorrow. So we wrote that. We wrote on the whiteboard, was Shaq in Beat Street? Yes or no? Everyone had to vote. We came, we got the tape. He's like, fast forward to the talent show. And the talent show in Beat Street was these two kids. One kid was like this tall, and the other kid was like this giant. And I won't lie, the kid looked a lot like Shaq. So
when he was a child, he said he was in Beat Street when he was like a little child?
When he was 10 or whatever, or 8 or whatever. So
he in Germany?
So, okay, so, so I'm like, some of this shit ain't adding up. Because when we pull it up and we're watching, I'm like, shit, is he telling the truth on this
one? Yeah.
And we stopped and the whole team is crowded around the TV like, I don't know. So this is, I think IMDb was just starting like to be a thing. So I was like, let me look this up. And I looked up Beat Street and it had like child number one, child number two. And it was not Shaq's name, obviously. So I'm like, bro, black and white, that wasn't you. And he said, no, because I had to use a fake name because of child labor laws.
Facts. Good comeback. Good comeback, Shaq. Child
labor laws. So we
good comeback, Shaq.
Fake name. Nah, man, that season was so fun, man. It was like, even though we didn't win, but we didn't make the playoffs. But it's like when you got a good group of dudes, like it just turns into fun. And what happened next year for us, I think a lot of it started with kind of the vibes we had built on the second half of that season.
I think you having all that experience, like so many people that are in the media now, you could tell they're, you know, what they say isn't really based on any experience or real knowledge. It's kind of just like observatory. So I think so much of what you observe in the NBA applies to just like real life shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think because I'll be honest, my shit is observatory shit. I didn't play, right? But
you're around.
You were exposed in the locker room.
When you're in the inside, it's not. That's why when Adrian Griffin gets fired, 9 out of 10 people are like, how could this happen? And if we've been on the inside, we're like, I know exactly how it happened.
You know exactly. when you lose the locker room. Yep.
And you never get it back. Never. Hey, you can never get. That's what. Well, I'll give him a chance. But ain't no give him a chance. Once they've decided. That's it, bro. I don't care if you're Phil Jackson.
And you'll be surprised to the depths that we'll go to make sure your shit doesn't work, too. You get a real cagey vet, you know what I mean? You'll be surprised. You'll be like, no way. Yes, he did, bro. He completely went. You know, you tell them left, they're going right for sure. Like, with an exclamation point, they're going to be rude about it. You know what I mean? Depending on, you get a hold of the wrong vet and lose that locker room. I seen GP do a masterful job in getting a coach fired. It's one of the best things I had ever seen in my life. But because of the way he did it, it was in typical GP fashion. But I'm saying, as soon as you lose that locker room with the wrong vet, you know,
it's over.
It's a wrap. You know what I mean?
That was Barron with Mike Dunleavy.
Exactly.
Because Mike Dunleavy trying to call all the Barron's, again, a basketball genius. You can't be
looking over to the side, calling every play. Yeah.
Yeah. So Barron would be like, it's funny because, you know, obviously we're scouting him. So we're seeing it happen. Barron would be like, you want, okay. And then you turn around and call the exact opposite. Whatever. You want to run this shit? Okay, we're going to go over there. You want to post? Okay, we're going to do high pick and roll. Like, he would literally like, okay, coach. And then turn around and just call his own shit.
That's beautiful, man. Yeah. Hey, man, I mean, we appreciate your time, man. I think we usually do the player thing, but getting the other side of the story, I mean, all this shit is perspective. So let's do it again. I think we probably cracked into like 15% of the stories and experience you got with Phoenix and the other team. So, man, this was awesome, and we appreciate your time, man.
Nah, man, thanks for having me. And like I said, this is coming off the heels of seeing Amari get his jersey retired and watching those old highlights. I took my oldest child with me, and she never knew. She's only known me as a media guy. And I'm like, no, this is what we did here.
Hey, I'm gonna be honest with you. I mean, I didn't realize you were that deep. I'm not to extend this, but I didn't realize you were that deep into the front office as you were. Now it makes a little bit more sense why I appreciate your hand of journalism in media, because, you know what I mean? Like you said, Mark West, the people you've been around, you've been exposed. The exposure at that level, in besides front offices and NBA locker rooms, it leads you to another lens. You understand why people make certain decisions. You understand the human side of players. You understand the business. You understand how much they need to OG. So just as a fan, it makes sense now to me why I gravitated the way you told stories, because you were exposed around a lot of the OGs and people that I was too around the same time. So we really appreciate you coming on, and we looking forward to, this ain't the only one. You're going to be, we hope to have you up on
for sure.
Forgotten Seasons, diving into some other subjects and in the spirit of our organics partnership growing. So we really appreciate it, bro.
Thanks, cousin.
Yes, cousin. Yes.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.